You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button on our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for May 5th, 2017. It's not safe for work.
Coming to you live from the post-Trump care drinking game day, May the 5th be with you, it's the Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal.
You got a fifth there, Drift Glass?
I'm working on a Blue Gal. And let me just say at the outset, Andrew Jackson was really angry when he saw what was happening regarding this podcast.
Why?
Because he saw in advance where we were going to go with it, and he knew in advance the where how badly it would end. And I'm sure he was very angry about it.
I'm missing something here. I don't know why.
Oh, I'm sorry. Andrew Jackson is the citation that Donald Trump used about the Civil War.
Right.
This week.
Uh-huh. But we're all over that because that was like 3 days ago, right?
Exactly. That. Well, my point being, that happened this week, too.
Yeah. Lots of things happened this week.
Yeah. Yeah. The big one was, of course, the May the 4th day, which was wonderful. And our sponsors returning, of course, each week. I'm just going to breeze through them because we've got kind of a big show. So we'll just stipulate the fact that Triffitt's Flowers will deliver free, but you won't like it. And Croc Blockers, hey, man, don't wear those shoes.
Right.
And all of our presenting sponsors and concurrent sponsors and collaborationist sponsors, all the wedding gift registries that we have sent out with our promo code for Mika and Joe and
gosh.
David and his wife. It's all paying off. It's all paying off here.
David Brooks. We want to be clear. We're talking about David Brooks marrying his intern.
David Brooks marries his intern, and Joe and Mika, MSNBC, begins their own in-house pundit breeding program, which I think is
that's
cost
not
effective.
Nice.
No, it's terrible. It's terrible of me to say that. That's why we say at the outset of the show, not safe for work.
Yeah.
And, you know, these are my opinions. This is, again, why Andrew Jackson would be furious with his podcast if he had not died long before the technology was ever invented. Anyway,
I don't have any problem with rich people marrying each other or rich people marrying younger than they did. My first husband was 23 years older than I am. So that happens. I have a problem with hypocrisy, and I have a problem with people who have tremendous influence over the conversation regarding government
everything.
And taxes yes. and how we manage the media and in a way, Donald Trump is the culmination of how the media has behaved for 25 years as well, which is
absolutely.
That they have profited off of the way they handle their job.
Yes.
And hidden that profiteering. And now we have a president doing that. So we are going to get right into Trump care because
yes, we are.
For a lot of people, yesterday was an incredibly hard and scary day.
Yes.
And it's easy for me to sit here and say, fear not, and talk about how many times fear not is in the Bible.
Yes.
But I'm not going to do that because yep. we have three kids on Medicaid and you and I are on Obamacare.
Yep.
And so
we
this
are.
Is personal. Mm-hmm. And it's terrifying. And I want to say this is not to say that Trump care, in spite of what Donald Trump said yesterday, Trump, this particular vote mm-hmm. does not undo Obamacare.
Doesn't change anything.
No.
This particular vote doesn't it changes a number of things. It lets Congressman Rodney Davis and
our congressman
Davis and LaHood come home and tell the meatheads who voted for them that they kept their promise. We
right.
kept our promise. And it lets all the despicable lowlife scumbags in the Republican Party put a W up on the which is so completely fucked up on so many levels.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're going to talk about. I would like to mention, if I may, just as a take a running start at the problems presented this week by that vote.
Okay. Go ahead.
That we have been prefacing this podcast for many, many weeks now by saying there's six basic stories.
Yeah, I can't go through that again.
No, but
please don't.
I would like to just say that the number one story that we've always said is the big story is Trump care is a massive tax cut for billionaires.
Right.
And
right.
Everything else flows at that, and Trump Russia, everything flows from that. Right. Everything flows from that. And here we are, where a bunch of Republicans who never read a bill, had no idea what was in it, had no public hearings, didn't get any scoring on it. Everything that they accused the Obama administration of doing, which, of course, the Obama administration didn't do.
Right.
All the stuff they lied about and whined about and were butthurt about, which is was all lies, is exactly what they did in order to pass a monumentally cruel and insane and vicious and completely destructive bill just to make Donald Trump happy. And so they can go home and tell their meathead constituents that they did something.
Well, and the meathead constituents, I don't know if they're going to be there when they get back, because this bill polls at 17%, and there are more Trump voters than that. So there are a lot of Trump voters that are against this bill. And as you say, I think it was just tremendous pressure from the White House. I don't put it beyond Donald Trump's ability to call a Republican congressman, as you told me yesterday, and say, you know, I'm going to come primary against you. I'm going to support a primary opponent. We're going to twist the knife and withhold funds from your campaign. We'll do an ad against you. I'll cross over and endorse the Democrat. Anything that he wanted to do because he has no principles. To get this, like you say, this W on the screen for himself. Uh-huh. There is also the complicity of the media pretending that this is a win for him.
Chris Cillizza.
Mm-hmm. And finally, I think the other part of this to me is the number of congressmen who actually lied to their constituents about what they were going to vote, how they were going to vote.
Yeah.
And then in the end voted to take away health insurance from sick people.
Yes.
I wrote about one today in New York who the woman's name is Andrea Mitchell, but she's on Medicaid. So she's no relation to Mrs. Greenspan.
Yeah.
But she twice was at a town hall at a meeting face to face with her congressman telling him face to face, I have a brain tumor. Will you promise to protect my health insurance? And he, to her face, said yes.
Of course.
And both times he voted for Trump Care mm-hmm. 1.0, Trump Care 2.0, he voted yes. So at that point, I think Trumpies or Fox News viewers, who are, by the way, being kept completely in the dark as to what this bill contains.
Yeah, there's no...
If all you watch on Fox or watch right-wing media, you're not being told what's in this.
Mm-hmm.
Am I talking too much? I'm just trying to get all of this out. In addition to what's in the bill harming people, a number of congressmen lied to their constituents directly about how they were going to vote and what they were for, including ours. Ours at a teletown hall, because he's too much of a chicken to face voters face to face. He has to have pre-selected phone call with constituents and hand-selected questions.
And promised he wouldn't vote
He promised, well, he promised that we were going to lower costs and not get rid of pre-existing conditions. And
Which
we were going to make sure everyone was covered.
Right.
And that his number one concern was all of the people under Obamacare who still didn't have insurance. And I'm looking at Junior Dude at that point, because we have it on speakerphone, rolling my eyes in my head saying, all of those people are in states that didn't expand Medicaid, 99% of them. That's what he's talking about.
Yep.
So there's the lying, and there's the vote, which hurts people. And finally, now, there's the not showing up for town halls and not being willing to face it's appearing cowardly about your own vote.
Right.
So I'm just wondering what the worst part of that is. Is the worst part you disagree with me on policy and voted for a bill that hurt me, or you lied to me directly, or, you know, the ads that are going to come out in 2018 are going to be, first of all, it's not Barack Obama anymore. It's a white woman or a white child in a hospital bed with oxygen up her nose.
Right.
And that's who your congressman hurt.
Yes.
And number two is here's a video of your congressman lying to you, mm-hmm. directly saying he was going to vote one way and voting the other way. And finally, then, where is he? He's, you know, our congressman, this is what I put up yesterday on Twitter, was Rodney Davis cannot publish his schedule on Facebook, on Twitter, on the internet, anywhere. He cannot publish his appearances.
No.
Now, how can you run for Congress and not tell people where you're going to be to shake their hand? Uh-huh. You can't. Uh-huh. So, and he's so in trouble right now with not only with sick people, but with every goddamn nurse in this community.
That's true.
With the AMA, with Springfield yeah. Clinic, with yep. the American Cancer Society, with dentists. With, there isn't, by the way, a health group in this country that wasn't opposed to this bill.
You know who has a lot of their headquarters? You know where the headquarters for a lot of Illinois lobbying organizations are in the health? In Springfield,
Illinois. Yeah. And also, what is interesting, this is a gerrymandered district.
Yep.
It was gerrymandered by Democrats to include as many colleges and universities as possible.
Yeah.
And Rodney Davis was elected in 2010 because kids don't turn out to vote. Now, I'm hoping that'll change. I know a whole lot of women who are going to turn out next year to vote.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, could we talk a little bit while we're on this subject about Michelle Goldberg's post to the New York Times?
I'd be happy to. I would like to say a couple of things before we do that.
Mm-hmm.
The first is I don't believe Republican voters mm-hmm. are capable any longer of distinguishing reality from fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you tell them that George Bush won the Iraq war when it's blatantly not the case,
mm-hmm.
they will believe it because that's how completely fucking brain dead they are.
Yep.
If you tell them Barack Obama is from Kenya and it doesn't matter how many times you prove them wrong, they'll believe it. If you come out, if Donald Trump comes out and says, I gave you all this stuff, it's all done, it's great.
Yeah.
And it just you just have to take it up with your congressman or take it up with whoever. I did all this stuff for you. I covered preconditions. I covered everything and walks away from the microphone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They will find a reason to blame liberals,
yep.
Democrats, Obama, mm-hmm. sunspots, whatever. Because as much as they are Republicans are good at one thing, and that is refusing to remember the heinous shit they did yesterday
and
lying to themselves constantly. Because if they stopped lying to themselves, they'd put rocks in their pockets and walk into the sea.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't possibly live with themselves.
Well, so I finally, to the point on Twitter where I realized that hell is a hall of mirrors and heaven is a hall of mirrors. Mm-hmm. And you walk through it and you see yourself as you really are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the afterlife, in my opinion, now is it's a hall of mirrors where the first thing you have to do is see yourself as you really are. And the conservatives on Twitter who believe that Bill O'Reilly was forced out by liberals trying to silence conservative voices, but Stephen Colbert telling a cock joke about Donald Trump is beyond the pale. And the number of people who said, quote, I've mm-hmm. never seen a president disrespected in this way.
Right. So this is where every one of those cowardly, craven, cruel assholes mm-hmm. who voted to take away our kids' health care mm-hmm. Was elected by majorities of Republicans in their districts
mm-hmm.
on the promise that they would take away our kids' health care.
So
Republican voters en masse are unfit to be considered able to be reasoned with.
Mm-hmm.
We have to put them in a completely different category now. We have to start considering them domestic enemies.
Well, and that's what I felt yesterday was that this vote was a terrorist vote.
Sure.
This was a vote designed to make liberals cry.
Yeah.
And it was designed to hurt people
that we care
mentally,
about.
Mentally
yeah.
hurt them.
Yeah.
And it succeeded.
And so
they drank beer. They drank terrible beer.
The shittiest people drinking the shittiest beer. That's right.
Right.
But the debate is now over. And it's been over for me for a long time, mm-hmm. but the debate should finally be over. Even I was listening to a little bit of Pod Save America,
mm-hmm.
and they were hard.
I don't listen to other podcasts anymore. I just don't have the. If I do, I start repeating what they say unconsciously. Yeah.
No. I just listened to a bit, and it was they were heartbroken because they really. And these are people who worked in the White House with Barack Obama, were his speechwriters, were his policy analysts. They went from mm-hmm. no podcast to a million people who were listening to them overnight. So they are big time. We're smaller.
Mm-hmm.
But they were heartbroken because their fantasy of out there somewhere. They're David Brooks fantasy. They're out there somewhere. Yeah. There's some moderate Republicans who maybe we can work with. Finally, they had to
that
give it
burst.
Up. They're all fucking rotten. They all have to go. Right. And the delusion that the GOP is salvageable should be over now. There is no way to save that party.
Right.
It's dead. And the kindest thing we can do is to find the most efficient way to bulldoze it to the fucking ground and make everyone in that party as powerless as possible. Because every time they touch the levers of power, they fuck things
they
up.
They hurt people. They hurt people.
And they
people.
Do it on purpose because they are cruel, narrow-minded, bigoted assholes.
Well, they're whores to wealthy interests.
Sure. Well, I mean, the base voters. The base voters who you know, this gets to Michelle Goldberg riff.
Yeah.
And one more bit of advice for the people who are on Crooked Media, who I know listen to our podcast, because our ideas crop up every couple of weeks on your podcast. Stop reading David Brooks.
Stop
reading George. Stop celebrating George Will. Oh, my God. George Will finally noticed the Republican Party is crazy. And so we're going to put him on the Lawrence Show. We're going to celebrate him. And we're going to say he has the most important column this week. George Will wrote a column that is essentially a liberal blogger column from 15 years ago.
Right.
But he's celebrated. Now, here's what you have to do. Stop reading these people and start listening to Blake from Glengarry Glen Ross. The Alec Baldwin character who says, the only thing that matters in this life is to get them to sign on the dotted line. Mm-hmm. Period. Fuck the people. They're stupid. They're cows. They'll give you their money if you just lie to them enough. I don't care what your, you know, whatever your conscience is bothering you, fuck you. And that is the Donald Trump GOP mentality. This bill was getting a bunch of Republican Congress creatures to sign on the dotted line on a shitty real estate deal that everyone knew was bad. And that was all it was. That's all it was.
And it will destroy their careers.
Yeah.
But so what? Yeah.
And so now we get to Michelle Goldberg.
Well, and let's just be clear, too, that every member of Congress that voted for this is disposable to Donald Trump. He does not care whether they get reelected or not. He's not looking past today.
No.
So fuck everyone who's not him is basically it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Michelle Goldberg wrote a column in the New York Times this week.
It's adorable.
She's a very smart woman. Her book on abortion is amazing.
Yeah.
I always enjoy her on MSNBC.
Yep.
And but she wrote an analysis of the emotions. Well, you go ahead and tell the story.
Emotions.
She was on Smirconish this morning, which is proof positive that something is terribly wrong with the column she wrote.
Well, the people who are dedicated, whose life and livelihoods depend entirely on propping up the giant lie of both sides, that's Matthew Dowd, Ron Fournier, people like Smirconish, people like that, are desperate to find some way to make an equivalence out of what is clearly one party being vicious, heartless assholes who are also stupid and bigoted. And the other one not. There's really no comparison between the two. So Smirconish has to really, you know, roll up his sleeves and dig way into the toilet to find a way to make these – to come up with an equivalence story. So Matthew Dowd, for example, was pissed that Republicans celebrated taking health care away from people and Democrats saying, hey, hey, goodbye.
Yeah, it's just, and I want to say something about that.
Both sides were so tacky. Both sides were so incredibly tacky. Really. If you know what would make cable news and network news a lot more interesting? If every time someone lied, they got that shit slapped out of them.
Right.
I would pay to see that. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. Say that to my face again. And oh, look, you told a lie. And at some point, you would lose so much skin off your nose, you would stop lying to people on camera for a living.
But, you know, the thing about that singing, because I've heard a lot of critiques from the far left or left about singing once healthcare is taken away.
Uh-huh.
That singing, from what I could tell from watching the C-SPAN clip, was mostly women congressmen. Uh-huh. By the way, all but three Republican congresswomen voted yes on this bill. So this is not good gender women vote to support people. There are plenty of Republican women in Congress. Out of the 20, I think it was 20 women, only three voted no. So, but the women on the Democratic side singing that, I was watching, and here's the deal with that. Those women have been sitting in Congress, most of them, since 2010 and longer, watching these assholes lie for 7 years, watching them lie about Barack Obama, watching them obstruct, watching them come forward with, 9/11 arguments about stupid shit.
Mocking the president for crying.
Yeah.
When children get shot.
Right.
I mean, there really are just fucking heartless monsters.
And you've been sitting there watching that since 2010.
Right.
That singing was the singing that comes out of you when your husband hits you for the last time.
That's right. That's it.
And
we're done.
You have finally reached the point where it's over. Right. And you know it's over for them. And they've hit you. Yes, it hurts like hell. But everyone saw them hit you.
Right.
And it's done. Your reputation is in the sewer.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens when you get hit? And I will tell you, I've never been actually physically abused.
Mm-hmm.
But believe me when I tell you, I've been in the situation where you sing.
Yep.
Where you sing because you're free.
Mm-hmm.
And that is totally understandable at that point.
Uh-huh.
Where you just say, oh, guess what? We're done now.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm sorry to get emotional. I'm okay. And I'm emotional because of yesterday as much as because of anything else. My personal life is very good. So... Mm-hmm.
Well, may I make another analogy while
I'd like you to talk for a few minutes while I pull myself together. Yeah.
This is also singing We Shall Overcome.
Yep, yep.
This is singing you stand right up in the face of the monsters who are trying to hurt you, and you say, fuck you.
Yep. Yep.
Do your worst, motherfucker.
Yep.
Do whatever you want. You're never going to break me. You're never going to turn me around, and I'm going to sing in your fucking grill. Because you're dead to me now.
Right.
We used to be partners. We used to be friends. We used to be colleagues. You're fucking dead to me now. And I will treat you now from now.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, bipartisanship has always been one-sided.
Yep.
It's always been Democrats should find a way to compromise with people who hate them, are racist, and are obviously trying to hurt them.
Otherwise, it's not bipartisan.
And that lie has employed literally tens of thousands of people in the media for way too long.
Right.
And they all need to go. And this was a bunch of women saying, fuck you, no more. No. We have to come to the same building every day.
Yep.
But I am going to find a way to make your life living hell.
Yep. And there were a lot of women on Twitter saying that yesterday, too. Like,
well, this
you don't understand how personal this is and how much I'm going to hurt you.
And so my wife today, who's a lovely person, and gets upset over all the right things.
And I'm pretty damn strong, too.
Yes,
believe me, this is not me being whimpering, okay?
No,
in some ways, I'm just weeping for my past self more than my present self. You guys need to understand that. I really am okay.
Yeah. So my wife handed me an article today in a digital...
Yes, I did.
And said, I really would like you to read this.
And I wasn't doing it out of cruelty, Driftglass. I really wasn't.
But I got to read this right now. Okay. And it was Michelle Goldberg. It was the New York Times, you know, and I will never be in the New York Times and I will never have any of those things. So I was reading, again, I'm reading what the elites are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The people who get into the New York Times and get to have at least a commanding presence on the national dialogue. Okay. Well, I like Michelle Goldberg. She's admirable and interesting. And then I wrote a post about it today where I wrote, see if you can spot the exact moment in which I said out loud, you have got to be fucking kidding me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because she starts, the title is How the Left Learned to Hate Like the Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's a little unfair.
It is.
It's not hate. I lead off with an actual little clip from Star Trek The Next Generation, where Chief O'Brien is explaining to a former adversary whose people had pushed him into a corner where he had to do terrible things. But I don't hate you, Cardassian. I hate what I became because of you. I don't want to hate these people. I never wanted to hate these people. But they're so monstrous. They're so bad. And they're so happy. They're so thrilled. The only thing that makes them happy is to make you suffer. They have to be stopped. They have to be stopped.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to do that, we have to start thinking about really, really efficient ways of taking them down. So I really do despise what they have made me and so many liberals like me become, because we don't want to hate these people. We want to help them. But
And I loved what one commenter on this post, and we're going to get into what she said, but one commenter just in response to the title of the article said, we haven't learned to hate, we've learned to fight.
Yeah.
And that's a different... But the thing is that when Democrats fight back, they're being cruel and mean and unfair.
Exactly. The moment the Iraq war became controversial was when Democrats pushed back.
Yeah.
Pushed back hard enough and loud. And these were not Democrats. These were dirty liberal bloggers like us. Mm-hmm. When we started saying, fuck you, loud enough, and enough bodies were coming back from Iraq and enough shit was falling apart that they couldn't cover it up anymore. That Michelle Malkin couldn't jump up and down or wave her hands and pretend that it wasn't happening. And Fox News lies came apart. Only then were liberals listened to. And at that point, it became, why do both sides are so angry? Why does everyone need to fight? Oh, my God, the partisanship. It's the corrupt duopoly, blue gal. Uh-huh. And that is the default lazy, cowardly position of scumbags like Matthew Dowd and Ron Fournier. So here we are in the middle of a lovely morning with our health care hanging by a thread. And my wife gives me this article, which starts out fine. And Michelle says deep in the article, objectively, there's no comparison between the conservative demonization of Mr. Obama and the progressive case against Mr. Trump.
Right. This is what she said on Smirconish. Exactly. They were discussing this article. Yeah. And she said, Democrats have proof that this is going on and it's really bad. And she said, you don't have to go. Some people on the left are going full conspiracy and saying that Donald Trump knew from day one and contacted the Russians and made arrangements and so forth. You don't have to go that far. It's already terrible. We have proof of is terrible.
But it's holding up these two. And I have said this, you have said this a million times.
Yep.
This is Chuck Todd saying Donald Trump's a racist. Mm-hmm. And Democrats point out that Donald Trump is a racist. Donald Trump says something incredibly racist and offensive. And Democrats point it out. And Chuck Todd says, oh, if both sides would just stop talking about race.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I've likened it before to font size.
Yeah.
You know, Republicans lie in 72-point font. Democrats say, hey, look, Republicans are lying in 72-point font. And Chuck Todd sits in the middle and strokes his beard and goes, if only they wouldn't use 72-point font. Why does everybody have to use 72-point font? And that's the problem. There is a media in place who do conspire, actively conspire as a group, as a community, as a cabal to force our national conversation into this bullshit pundit wilderness. You can never judge anything the right says, because if you raise your voice, well, you're just as bad as them. And if you don't, you let them get away with it.
Right.
And that's why we have to say, no, fuck you all. You're all the prop. You all have to go. So anyway, she says very clearly, no. The left has a really good case against Donald Trump. It's all factual. It's all fact-based. The right's case against Obama was all conspiracies and bullshit and nonsense. Mm-hmm. It was just nuts.
Birtherism, particularly, she's talking about. Yeah.
It was ludicrous. And then comes the razor and the apple.
Mm-hmm.
Facts aside, there's an emotional symmetry between the conservative reaction to past Democratic presidents, meaning I hate Negroes, and the liberal response to Mr. Trump, meaning I hate racist, lying fire demons who want to destroy my country. See, there's an emotional symmetry, blue guy. Understand, there's an emotional symmetry, and that's what we're going to spend the rest of the fucking column talking about.
Right.
Suddenly,
why are they both so angry?
Suddenly, left of center people get what it's like to have a president who's the living negation of all they value. Like Barack Obama was the negation of everything that the conservatives valued because he was black.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And it make them ashamed before their children because of all the terrible scandals and the swearing that Barack Obama did and all the pussy grabbing he did.
No.
I mean, the converse of that is that these people are proud of the fact they elected a racist orange fire demon who grabs women's pussies and lies constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And they are.
Mm-hmm.
They're raising their children to respect the worst person I can think of.
Yep.
Maybe they shouldn't have children. Maybe their children should be taken away from them. Mm-hmm. But that's a different conversation for a different day. And the whole column goes on like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I took a breath.
Because the emotional anger is, as long as you're as angry as the Tea Party was in 2010, maybe you'll have success because you're just as angry. no, really, 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 my congressman lied to my face.
So I got a couple of things to add to that.
Yeah.
The first is suddenly left of center people. I'm one of those, apparently. We finally get what it's like to have a president who is the living negation of all they value. Apparently, Michelle Goldberg slept through the entire Bush administration.
She did.
Which is weird because there was a lot of noise going on. It was very loud.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of amazed that she completely fucking forgot about the entire history of America before Barack Obama was president, just like the Tea Party did, because it's really inconvenient to her stupid fucking argument. Second, I will explain to her what America was like before 2009, if she'd like me to. But what I told her to do was go to a window and just look out. Nothing violent, nothing bad. Just look out the window. And the first thing you'll notice is you're not in North Korea. And that means there is no State Affairs Commission of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea to force these millions of assholes to listen to Rush Limbaugh every day. They can change the channel anytime they want. They're not obliged to listen to Sean Hannity. No one's forcing them to read Mike Levin. No one's forcing them to read Breitbart. No one's putting a fucking gun to their head and saying, you must go to InfoWars and listen to everything Alex Jones says.
Yeah.
Year after year after year. And as every one of their stupid fucking lies blows up in their face, after the 100th lie blows up in their face, what do? They belly crawl back to Sean Hannity and beg for the 101st lie because they are fucking scum. They do this to themselves. Nobody. All they have to do is change the channel, Michelle. All they have to do is click on a different fucking website for a week. All of the truth that you want them to see is out there and available and free to them should they choose to do so. They are choosing to be this fucking awful. And then they create this self-contained delusional nightmare. They read only people who lie to them and reinforce their paranoia. And then they behave in reckless, dangerous, utterly destructive ways. And we on the left are left with a couple of options. One, let them do it. Let them fuck the country up. Let them roll over us. Or two, fight back.
Right.
So fuck your emotional symmetry. None of these people is required by law to let Rush Limbaugh take a shit in their skull for the last 20 years. They did it to themselves, and now they have to fucking pay for it. Now we have to take Rush Limbaugh away from them. Now we have to make them start behaving like citizens because right now they're basically angry, ignorant, dangerous children with a fucking machine gun. And they need to be sequestered from normal people because they're not normal. Because, Michelle, here's the thing. Their political party isn't a political party. It's a cult. And their political movement isn't an ideology. It's a dissociative disorder. They're mentally ill at this point. They cannot be trusted to perform the basic act of citizenship of figuring out whether or not the guy who's telling me that he's going to bring coal jobs back and blow jobs and backpacks for everyone and the healthcare is going to be great, doing minimal intellectual work necessary to figure out if this asshole is lying to me. And once it turns out he is lying to you, well, I'll just defend him anyway because that's how completely brain dead I am.
Yep.
So you
know
what?
This is my team, right or wrong. Right. Yep. Yep. Right.
And I don't. So as I said, and this is a little bit cruel, I have no doubt the Republicans sincerely believe the noxious claptrap they believe just as passionately as Alexander Stevens believed that black people were put on earth to serve white people. And just as passionately as Magda Goebbels believed that her children were better off dead than living in a world without the Nazi Party.
Right.
I totally believe they're sincere about it. And I totally believe that they believe that. I just don't care anymore.
Right. Right.
I only care about them finding the most efficient way of ending this threat to my
and
country.
And reducing their power to the point where it's inert because they're crazy. And I just want to point out to you, this is just on Twitter, and it's a picture of a memo. So I can't sort of report on this, except that that's where it is. But apparently, a memo has gone out to the FDA offices in D.C.
Yeah.
Did you see this?
It might be. I don't think it's a hoax, but it might be.
I don't think it's a hoax either, but it might be. But that the TVs in the FDA building are going to be set to Fox, and you're just going to have to put up with that.
Because you might miss the 2 minutes hate every day if it wasn't Fox all the time.
So, Fox. Mm-hmm. And that is state TV, and that's what it is. Where do you want to go from here, Drip Glass?
I'm still cooking on the notes. I mean, I think we can go through, because it's really important to remember that healthcare wasn't the only thing that happened this week.
That's the scary part, is this how much we're losing in terms of, I mean, I guess the other part of our show should be devoted to Comey.
Yeah, well,
and
sure. And
you know, the fact that there's apparently a grand jury involved now with Trump Russia.
Yeah.
And next week we have Sally Yates's testimony to look forward to.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's spin the wheel. And I'm gonna call out all the things I have in our notes one sentence at a time.
Okay.
How's that sound?
That sounds good.
And then you just pick whatever you want to talk about, because Sean Spicer can't quite figure out what a wall is.
Oh, and his budget director can't figure out. They haven't done the math on it. When your budget director comes out and says, we haven't done the math,
I don't really know how much it'll cost or where we go.
You know, there's the healthcare bill didn't have a CBO score.
Right.
And you can just stop talking about fiscal responsibility forever.
Well, again, we on the left know this.
Yep.
We've known this
for a long time.
And the problem with this, the exasperating part, is how predictable it was.
Mm-hmm.
That the minute President Stupid is sworn in, they just don't care about any of the things that they swore on the lives of their children they cared about for 8 years under Barack
mm-hmm.
Obama,
mm-hmm.
because they're reprogrammable meatbags. That's all they are. They might be a million other things that are laudable and kind, and they might throw great barbecues, and they might help you, you know, as a crossing guard. When it comes to their political opinions, they are just fucking zombies, and they need to be treated as fucking zombies. Number two, border agents are now apparently turning away asylum seekers.
Yep.
Even though they're not supposed to, even though our law said, apparently they're just taking it upon themselves from time to time to tell asylum seekers, sorry, America's closed.
Yep.
President Stupid attacked the fake media again this week, apparently randomly. But of course, it's never random. It's always, holy crap, there's a story that's going to make me look stupid, so I need to raise a ruckus over here about something.
Well, and he held a series of interviews over the weekend to celebrate his 100 days.
Yes.
Which were all insane.
Yeah, they were all rambling, incoherent, demented, and I mean demented, nonsense.
And so when even Joe Scarborough comes in on Monday morning and says we have to talk about dementia
and the 25th
and the President of the United States, yeah.
James Comey was apparently the best thing Hillary had going for her, according to President Stupid.
Uh-huh.
And let's be clear what actually happened with James Comey. Even though there is no one who will ever testify to this or say this out loud, I would say that Sherlock Holmes would put this together and say, here's what's likely happened.
Mm-hmm.
Comey thought Hillary would win.
Yep.
And he thought the GOP would keep the House and or the Senate, which meant the people that control his pocketbook, his purse strings, his budget, will be running witch hunts from now until doomsday.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have his ass dragged through the brambles over and over and over again for not digging deeper and being more diligent and being more open about this bullshit fake email scandal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He was covering his ass with the people he thought were going to be funding his department by dropping this bomb into the middle of the election.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he was doing.
Also, Jason Chaffetz leaked his shit.
Yeah. And you know what? And Comey said under oath that he knew that they would leak it.
Yeah.
He said, I know how Congress works. I know how this works. Of course I knew what they're going to. I didn't leak it, but I knew they would. Because let's face it, that's who these fuckers are.
Yep.
And that's who Jason Chaffetz is.
And the New York office had a lot to do with this. The Giuliani faction of the FBI sitting there whacking off to Clinton Cash.
Oh, I love Clinton Cash. Some of that good porn. Oh, God, I love it so much.
And they were a hostile force within the FBI that could not be counted on to toe any kind of line from the director's office. So they were going rogue. You can't control them. And you know Congress is going to leak. And yeah, like you say, he is trying to balance, as you said, he thinks Hillary's going to win. So we're going to have another 3 years of Benghazi investigations and another 3 years of email investigations. So I have to look as though I care about that.
Right. And I'm going to do that by giving my funders what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the question becomes, well, if you're going to do that, why didn't you tell anybody that Trump was being investigated? But of course, there's no answer.
It doesn't matter because he's not going to be president.
There's no answer what he did was deeply political. In the small piece sense of defending his job and his budget from people who were going to come after him after what everyone assumed would happen. But that isn't what happened. He dropped a bomb in the election. That effectively killed any momentum she had. And he put Donald Trump in office, along with a bunch of other factors. And you know who said that? Hillary Clinton.
And James Comey essentially said that too, by the way.
Hillary Clinton sat for an interview this week and answered questions very honestly and said, yes, I made mistakes. My campaign made mistakes. We, you know, we did dumb things and this other thing happened and this other thing happened and Comey happened and Russia hacked and WikiLeaks. All those things can be true. This is not a binary situation. I know how, you know, dumb people need it to be one or the other, but it's not the case. There's lots of things that are true all at once. But she sat, she answered questions very honestly, I think very capably. And I was like, shit, I really wish this woman was not president.
Well, yeah, especially when she was answering questions about North Korea.
Yeah.
And she knows shit. She knows where these countries are and who's affected and who you have to get on board. And then she talks about Syria. And she admitted that she was for the bombing. And she also admits that the bombing didn't do anything. Right. So, you know, it probably would have been, she would have made the same mistake. And she said that.
And that's
so, you know, that kind of candor and that kind of honesty
and
that kind of competence
and the misogynists and the haters went completely ballistic.
Nuts.
They went nuts.
And especially in the media.
Yeah. Why can't she shut up and go away? Why won't she take responsibility? It really and it's when you see that so nakedly that
in real time, immediately responding with you know, her contention that there are parts of the country that don't have broadband and should.
Uh-huh.
And that is considered snobbery. That's snobbery.
To
mention that there are parts of the country that don't have broadband.
Well, it's also just showing off that you've actually read things.
Yeah.
It's just a bunch of show-off-y.
Why would she do that?
Yeah. And this again, this is there's a real simple thing that any listener can do, other than send us money, of course, which is always a good idea. but it's very simple. It's the Sherlock Holmes, you know, deductive method of reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, start eliminating everything that this isn't.
Right.
So, okay, were you pissed when – are you pissed at Hillary Clinton for being secretive? Okay. Is Donald Trump secretive? Oh, fuck yeah. Okay. Is she's vindictive? Is Donald Trump vindictive? Oh yeah, that's the defining characteristic of his life. You start just sort of negating their objections based on their actual decision. Same thing with Barack Obama. You start going down the list of all the things that Republicans claimed to hate about Obama, and now suddenly don't give a shit that Donald Trump is actually doing them, and actually doing them 1,000 times worse. And you get to the bottom like, oh, you're a racist.
Mm-hmm.
You're a fucking racist. You hated the idea of a black man being over you. Period. And you reverse engineer all this bullshit policy shit that you know nothing about into a bunch of lame ass excuses for why you're an asshole.
Right.
And now that things are reversed, you don't care. You know, Hillary Clinton drove you crazy for a lot of reasons, but one of them really was because she was a woman.
Yeah.
And the idea of a woman being your boss makes your blood boil, and you can't stand that. So you will find a reason. And Hillary Clinton gives people a lot of reasons to dislike her, but none of them are dispositive, I think is the word I'm looking for. None of them stand up to the fact that you then voted for Donald Trump, because everything you hate about her, he is that in actuality and in spades.
Right.
So, I get it. You're a moron. I get it. You're a racist. I get it. You're a misogynist. There's a bunch of other things you are, but that's also true. President Stupid called for a good government shutdown in September to clean up
the
Senate.
What the hell?
I don't know. I mean,
what happened
this week.
Yeah, it did.
And then we found out that he was also, and this is a direct quote, I think, from CBS, directly involved in the post-inauguration hunt for the rogue National Park Service tweeter. You know that bastard or bitch, the man or woman, the brave, noble soul who was tweeting out, you know, pictures of the inauguration, pointing out that he was lying about his crowd size, as he always lies about his crowd size. Apparently, he got directly, personally involved in trying to find out who that person was. But hey, you know, Hillary's vindictive, right?
And he doesn't have time to appoint 400 people to the White House.
He's busy
but he has time to order a beer party.
And hey, look, let's invite a mass murdering Philippine dictator and have a little jerk off party and talk about what an awesome guy he is. Apparently, Ben Carson, speaking of horrible mistakes, let it slip that he hates the idea that government housing projects for poor people should be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you should hate living there and want to leave as quickly as possible. Again, Ben Carson, sure, he's a great neurosurgeon. There are movies made about his life, but he is completely brain dead. He is absolutely out of his fucking mind. And all that's left in there is this, you know, like 5 Ayn Rand talking points. What we have to do is make poor people even more miserable than they already are. And then something, America will be great again. And finally, on the hit parade, President Stupid put an anti-choice activist named Julie Manning in charge of Title X programs, which provide family planning funding for poor Americans or those without health insurance. And that number, without health insurance, is going to go way, way up.
They all need to go.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's stop. Yep. I want to stop with all the bad news because we really are piling it on now.
This was a bit emotionally bad. This wasn't piling on. This was saying all this stuff happened while we were watching the two big stories. There's always a bunch of stuff going on under the surface. So
and we didn't talk about Colbert enough. Right. We didn't talk enough about John Dickerson, who I don't always like.
No.
But Donald Trump insulting him to his face.
Right.
And also, what got lost in all the right-wing noise about Colbert was that he was literally defending his friend John Dickerson.
Yes.
And then saying, you know, John Dickerson's a classy guy and isn't going to throw an insult. Let me show you how to throw insults. And then he went off.
Right.
To show, you know, with 20 insults in a way that you do at a parking lot, right?
Well, you know who was famous for that?
Cyrano de Bergerac.
Cyrano de Bergerac.
He said that, yeah.
Insulting my nose, you call that an insult? Let me show you how to insult a nose.
Right,
And so there's a fine old tradition of one-upping someone by showing them how to really do an insult.
Right.
Because Donald Trump's face is a man baby who sucks at insulting people. All he can say is bad.
Well, and he did Lion Ted and Little Marco and Low Energy Bush, Jeb.
Hillary.
And bleeding from her whatever. And, you know, that was his debate strategy for a year and a half.
And it worked.
Yep. So,
Because that's why we call them pig people.
Middle Child will be on the show next week because she wants to thank my Twitter followers for naming her plants. We did a thing on a Saturday.
That's right.
She didn't know what to name her two. She got these little seed packets.
Uh-huh.
And so she will be on the show for a few minutes next week to thank everyone for naming her plants. And this is very important to her because they're living things and she wants to nurture them. So that's a good thing.
And she wants to pit them against each other.
Yeah, well, she's claims that one plant is helping the other grow. So, that's happening too. And she asked me a very interesting question this morning on the way to school. She said, why don't more men pretend they're feminists in order to get dates?
Oh, it's please. If I had, I was handing out that advice button to every guy I knew. Come on.
And I said, they do. and what is fascinating about that middle child is you can tell in two dates whether or not it's true or not about them. So just hold back all of your affection. Keep a little bit of distance and go out with them on a second date. And you'll find out whether they're a real feminist or not and how they feel about equality and how they really feel about treating women. You'll find out right away. You're going to just observe.
Watch how they treat the wait staff.
Yep, exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly. How do they treat people below them in other ways? And you'll see right away whether they are worthy of your attention or not.
Hey, I have some good news if you'd like.
I'd love some good news.
This week, the Midwest, including our area, was hit by torrential rain.
Mm-hmm.
Our basement didn't flood.
Thank you for paying for our basement drainage system
sometimes
a year and a half ago.
The thing that doesn't happen is the great thing. But
that's true.
I lost.
That's true.
I split my library when I gave up my condo and moved to Springfield just out of space. And I lost half of my books in the flood and a bunch of other stuff.
And flooding.
It flooded seriously.
And
it wouldn't stop.
And that was on our show. We were like, that week we played a best of because we were dealing with huge, you know, what was it? Maybe 7 or 8 inches of water in our basement.
Yeah. And
it was a backup of the sewer. It wasn't just rain getting in.
It was geysering up out of the sewer into our basement, and it was not pleasant. And I also lost my car in that flood.
Yes, you did.
It literally flooded up on the street to the window.
Yeah.
And blew out the electrics. But that didn't happen. And you know what? A lot of people in the Midwest suffered. A lot of people lost homes. There were tornadoes. There were massive floods all over the place. This is not us going, ha ha, we're warm and dry. This is our saying we are very grateful for what we have.
Yep.
And we
charged that two or three. It was 3 years ago, I think it was.
I believe you did.
We charged that, and thanks to you guys, we paid it off little by little, and that's paid off.
Yep.
The shocks and struts will be paid off soon.
Yep.
And taxes. That's yeah. We're going to be paying our 2016 taxes for a while, but that's okay.
That's okay. That's fun.
That's okay.
We are extremely lucky and grateful, and we have lots of tools to deal with the problems that are being thrown at all of us all the time. Mm-hmm. And we really hope that in some way we are able to help you cope with what is a really, really shitty hand that we've dealt.
Yeah, this isn't the last loss we're going to have, folks. Brace yourselves.
No.
And we're just Melissa McEwen, who introduced us to each other, by the way. She is responsible for so much. She had a tweet yesterday about just being so... I can't remember the word she used, but it was like luminescently angry.
Yes.
That she has to fight every 2 days with phone calls to Congress to get basic services that we should just expect from our government.
Yeah.
You know, that you have to fight this hard, but the enemy is this awful, and they all have to go. This is just, as Michelle Goldberg pointed out before she went all both sider in her article, you know, we've got evidence that this is going on. And it's not, I'm angry because someone against my values is president. I'd be angry about that, and we'd have a podcast about it if it was a Republican president who wasn't insane and wasn't in bed with the Russians and wasn't lying just for the sake of lying and wasn't surprised that he's president all of a sudden. Look, I'm president. I'm in front of the Congress and I'm president because I got a House bill passed.
Yay.
And the people on thank you to the reporters on Twitter who said, can you imagine if Barack Obama held a party at the White House because one of his bills got through one House of Congress?
I remember when Barack Obama had to have a beer summit because he pointed out the fact that the Cambridge police shouldn't have arrested a black man on his front porch.
In
his own fucking house. And he got to go have a beer summit because I have to prove everyone I'm not an angry black man. I'm a fucking Vulcan who never gets upset about anything. And then you're going to bash me about not getting upset enough about what you care about.
Right.
No. Right. See, here's the thing. We remember stuff.
Yeah.
And I know it doesn't come in handy very often except at trivia contests and among other liberals because Republicans literally don't remember what they believed yesterday. This is just...
they've never seen a president disrespected the way Donald Trump is.
It's never happened. And the way they ran through the Affordable Care Act without a single hearing or talking about anything and without any Republican... And this is, by the way... Not just average Republican meatheads.
Yeah.
This is David Gregory. This is the former host of Meet the Press, who now has to share panels with Trump juggalos and various other hobos and third-tier pundits, talking about how, the Republicans pushed this through without any discussion or conversation or anything, just like they did with the Affordable Care Act. So, both sides. And again, how much livelier would cable news be if Anderson Cooper just went over and turned his rings out so there'd be no scarring. I just slapped the shit out of him. I said, every time you open your big simian pie hole, I'm going to slap you stupid if you lie. That goes for you. Kayleigh McEnany, she wouldn't last a day. Lord. Jeffrey Orr looked like he'd be covered with bandages. I have a feeling he'd keep coming back because he liked that money. Jeffrey Orr likes the money.
Yeah, and CNN seems to just want to pay him. Let's switch. We aren't going to do like a formal science fiction university separate show because I don't want to commit to that every day. But we both enjoyed watching American Gods.
You did, very much.
This week.
Which is not science fiction. It's,
what is it?
It's fantasy horror.
It's fantasy horror. Okay. Because there's no science involved with these goblins coming out from the earth. Right.
The predicate is gods are real.
Mm-hmm.
And old ones fall and new ones rise based on worship, people you have worshiping you. And you can put some science into that if you like, but I prefer to think of it as a great old style, like the Iliad. This is mythology. And it's on a grand scale in America. And it was gorgeous, beautifully shot. And it's pretty true to the book. They did have one character, which I think was a big plus. We haven't seen him yet. They added Vulcan. Who's Corbin Burnson, who's a gun nut.
And I liked it. I I didn't see it so much as Game of Thrones-ish in the fantasy way as I saw it as kind of Southern Gothic in a way. Is that wrong to say?
No.
It as kind of
that's fine.
Season one of True Detective.
Yeah.
You know, with the church, with the vines growing over it, and kind of we're dealing with some voodoo stuff that may or may not be real, but it's really weird, and the people that are involved with it are...
Neil Gaiman went through America to places mm-hmm. where people don't normally go.
Right, right.
Into underground right. caves and to underground, you know, abandoned amusement parks and little towns where they have these weird rituals. And really, that's what True Detective was very much about. It was, you've never seen this part. Most of you have never seen this part of the country.
Right.
And it's weird, and it's beautiful, and it's terrifying, and it's alien. And we're going to photograph it in a lush, absolutely vivid, a compelling way, make it part of the story. It reminds me of Mr. Robot, too. Mm-hmm. We're going to make mm-hmm. the setting absolutely part of the story.
Right.
And,
right.
And it's this country. I mean, you know, the places,
it's America.
The places
oh, yeah.
you're traveling through are places that are here and are real, but you've never seen, I've never seen them, or I've never seen them yeah. this way.
Not this way.
Yeah.
Does Neil Gaiman write science fiction also?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He wrote comic books and science fiction and horror and all sorts of things.
He's very prolific. I know that. And his fans went absolutely bananas. I was not familiar with this. I'm familiar with Gaiman, and I know this is one of his titles, but I wasn't sort of familiar with this book the way people are incredibly passionate about yeah. American Gods, and, you know, went absolutely bananas when they found out that someone was making a miniseries with a budget to put this on.
And that's the key of miniseries. This is what screwed up Dune, the yeah. movie. Yeah. The original movie was like 5 hours long or something like that. And mm-hmm. they cut it down to something that was just unintelligible hash. Mm-hmm. There mm-hmm. was a mini series of Dune that I thought was pretty true to the book and mm-hmm. Books, I should say. And that's what's necessary for a novel this big and complex, probably for any novel. The only way to do it justice is to give it a mini series.
Well, speaking of that, there was a movie of The Handmaid's Tale made in the 90s that was terrible. And now they're doing a mini series on Hulu, which I have watched all four episodes so far. I'm passionate about the book. Margaret Atwood is probably my favorite living author.
And you correspond with her in a certain way.
I have sent her photoshops of things from her book. I sent her a photoshop of one of the items on her book in one of her books. And she did respond yeah. that she liked it.
Yeah.
yeah. So because she does not write science fiction so much as what she calls speculative fiction.
Yes.
What if?
Yeah. Speculate.
What if the religious right really did get everything they wanted.
Yeah.
And what would the world look like? That's what Handmaid's Tale is, her speculation to that effect. There are things in this miniseries that are different from the book. A particular change in one character that people have written about, and I don't think it's a spoiler because you'll see it right away. The main character, Offred, is in service to a family, a wife and husband. And the wife in the book is an old lady. And the wife in the miniseries is young and attractive and wearing high heels and a tight skirt and blonde. And they did that specifically and consciously in order for Offred to have a romantic and sexual rival for the husband's attention.
Right.
On the other hand, and they also made the husband younger. I mean, this is all just sort of to sex it up as uh-huh. far as I'm concerned. You really lose something in doing that. I know that they made that conscious choice for television and for the show.
Sure, right.
In the book... the commander's wife is a former televangelist and had a show. She was on TV. Yeah, she was Tammy Faye Baker. That's what she was.
Yeah.
And preached and
Phyllis Schlafly, you know.
And Phyllis Schlafly, all the people who are on television all the time right. preaching. And she gets everything she wants.
Right.
You know, the world transforms into what she tells everyone the way the world should be, and that means that she personally has to give up a tremendous amount of access to media and power.
Right.
And is a, in that respect, a tragic figure in that she's sitting there in the world that she created And hates it and hates everybody. Uh-huh. But she made this bed literally,
and takes it out on people.
Yeah. So you see a little bit of that in episode four. You see a little bit, a glimpse of the commander's wife having some abilities to discuss things intellectually and being squashed. But you don't have, as of yet, you don't have a sense that she was instrumental in creating this world. Uh-huh. And I think they just took that away. And that's too bad. Well, from my perspective, as someone who loved the book, that's too bad.
One of the things,
also, oh, go ahead.
Oh, I just was going to say, one of the writing exercises that we mm-hmm. did in writing classes, and I took with me when I did facilitated writing, was parody.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one of five or six well-known stories so that you're constantly, you know, grading the same story over time and parody it. And mm-hmm. it doesn't teach you to write brilliantly, but it does teach you what a story structure looks like. Mm-hmm. And that when you tamper with, and a good writer makes everything pull its weight.
Mm-hmm.
So when you
mm-hmm.
take out one piece, you change everything.
Yep.
And it gets really hard to see that when you're reading through it, and it's sort of you're on a journey. But when you start disassembling it, reassembling it, and try to make it into something else, like, oh, crap, if I take away this piece, this whole subtext doesn't make any sense. And it really teaches you to be respectful of story structure when you're playing with it.
One of the things that's missing also from my perspective in the miniseries, Margaret Atwood has a tremendously wry sense of humor. And I always think of a way that one reviewer discussed my mother's paintings, which was Amanda Short paints a giggle in the middle of a nightmare. And that is what is there in constantly in Margaret Atwood's fiction. You will see the giggle in the middle of a nightmare. The nightmare, when you put it in visually, and the amount of torture that women go through in this particular society uh-huh. is very hard to watch. And it's from my perspective, it's missing the giggle.
Right.
There is a scene in another of Margaret Atwood's books called Oryx and Crake, which is about genetic testing and genetic design.
At the end of the world, right?
And the end of the world. Uh-huh. And I could get into that. I don't want to spoil the book for anyone. But there's one scene that's mentioned in a lot of reviews where they genetically modify a chicken over and over again until what you have is two breasts and a hole in which to feed the chicken. There's uh-huh. no eyes. There's no beak. There's no nothing. It's just feed and it becomes chicken breasts.
Right.
And you realize, oh, they've really taken this, you know, way further than it really needed to go. It's no longer a chicken because all we really need are these two cuts of meat.
Right. That's it.
And it's the way she talks about it. It's a chicken joke. You know, it's not just talking about how far you can take science.
Right.
We're going to put a chicken joke in there. And then the other thing about, and I think this is also true about American Gods and about Mr. Robot and a lot of these other shows is, and I'm starting to get a little tired of it, is the necessity of putting a music video somewhere in the show of it's not just let's tell the story, but we're going to put... You know, we're going to have some sort of rock music in the background while action takes place
uh-huh.
to make it visually interesting. And this is where, of course, this is where a lot of directors got their background was music videos,
yes,
right?
True.
So they're going to do this. There's one particular scene, though, in Handmaid's Tale where the counter-revolution is happening. And it's very clear that... the religious right and the patriarchy is militarily taking over the world. And what is in the background, not right in the front, it's not like the song is playing, it's only playing very subtly as the explosions go off and the fighting happens and the chanting, and it's very subtle.
Jesus Wants Me for a Sunbeam?
No. Oh, okay. It's Heart of Glass by Blondie.
Yeah. That's a good choice.
Once I was in love and it was a gas, uh-huh. then I turned out had a heart of glass. And you just... It's very lyrical and almost church music in the background.
I can hear that. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, yeah. While basically the army is moving in and taking over and arresting women. That's what's happening. So I recommend it. I recommend the book. Believe me,
Let me ask you a question. Do you recommend it for all ages?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
No. It's not all ages. It's not for kids.
What's the cutoff for that then?
Well, I think it depends on how sensitive the young woman you're introducing this to is, you know, because there's rape and it's violent. It's really violent.
I had the same issue with Parable of the Sower.
Which, as you know, I got 20 pages into and could not go any further.
Not because it's not beautiful writing.
It's very well written.
It's so
painful. It made me want to vomit to read it. It's so painful to read. Yep.
This is why science fiction or spec lit is not escapist literature.
Right.
A lot of it is junk. A lot of it's escapist. I'm reading through some young adult books now for a different writing project that I'm hoping I'm going to get on or get involved with. And that's all fine. That's also escapist. But the best of science fiction is literature.
Mm-hmm.
And literature, especially about what if X or Y keeps going on, is almost always going to be incredibly fucking depressing. Because it's, you know, Ray Bradbury, this is the thing on top of my blog that I've had there for years. I don't try to predict the future. I try to prevent it. It's usually cautionary tales, and they're incredibly and they're beautiful and they're well written, and they're sweeping, and they take you in. But they're not for kids.
Yeah. Well, and that's how I'd like to end this podcast, is to talk about the fact that we are living in a great age for art and a great age for television and a great age for a lot of things. Great age for technology. And the bad things that are happening and the scary things that are happening to us specifically.
Which are real.
We are not immune. None of us are immune from this. But if you can, and it's hard if you're dealing with cancer, and you know, I had an exchange with someone yesterday on Twitter about losing your mom to cancer with a woman. And this is my first Mother's Day next weekend without my mom.
Right.
And I get, now we're getting geared up. My church does, you know, the walk for cancer and puts luminaries out for people who died of cancer. And this year, I've got to put out a luminary for my mom, which it never occurred to me. It didn't occur to me last year at the walk that I would be doing this. You know, that wasn't in the picture. She got sick and died very suddenly. But these kind of exchanges and the fact that I was able to communicate with her was the thing I walked away from. Like, wow, I was able to talk with a complete and utter stranger with whom I had a shared bond. And she and I sort of held each other up in the worst afternoon for health insurance that we've had in our lives.
Yeah.
So if you can find ounces of gratitude in your day to cling to, do it.
And lean on people.
We always try in this podcast to leave people with a sense of here's one thing that you can take out of this that hopefully will give you a chance to inhale instead of just pant and panic. We need that, and we need you, and thank you for listening. Thank you for being there for us. Keep hope alive. The first thing I tweeted after this vote happened was, you know, single payer, here we come.
Yeah.
It might take 10 more years, but the debate has permanently changed
health
insurance.
It really has. And those women.
Don't forget what it was like 5 years ago.
Those women in their pussy hats have changed the world.
They've changed the world.
And they're going to go. And they're not. They haven't gone anywhere. They've just gotten. They have gone from, you know, they've gone to 11, Blue Gal. Let's talk about 11.
We have gone to 11.
Okay, that's it. You're never going to be able to leave your Senate or congressional office without seeing an army of really pissed off constituents who have the facts at their disposal, who want to know.
Or moms.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. This is the power of motherhood and womanhood and paying attention.
Yeah.
And we're paying attention. And we now have at our disposal, in our hands, cameras, microphones, and the ability to communicate to the world what we've seen and what we experience.
Yeah.
And don't lose sight of how different that is.
Yes, it is.
from, you know, when we were born and even 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you and I started blogging before there was YouTube.
We did.
I keep saying that to people and my kids don't believe us.
What?
They don't believe. What?
Why don't your
old
posts?
There was no YouTube.
Why don't your old posts have videos in them? Well, it was time before YouTube, young. And Liz, pull up and share. No, I don't want to. And they're just off.
There wasn't time before YouTube. That's not possible. I remember the day I knew Barack Obama was going to win the Democratic nomination was he had embeddable video for bloggers at his website.
Oh,
it wasn't YouTube. It wasn't YouTube yet.
It's a revolution.
It was embeddable code that he provided his staff. Provided to bloggers to put his speech in Selma up on the web and disseminate it through liberal bloggers to the world by providing us with embeddable code. And that was only 2008, people. That, you know.
As long as we're good news, Andrew Sullivan has once again quit the liberal conservative movement. So. He does this once a year.
I'm just waiting for David Sirota to get bored with political writing again.
Yeah, no.
You know, he was bored with political writing the year that Obamacare passed.
Yeah. No, today,
I'm finding this tiresome. I'm going to China.
Today, Andrew Sullivan announced that he's done with conservatism, that it's a hoax, that I finally had it. I break with thee. And he throws dog poop on their shoes.
And now we have to send him some crock blockers.
No. Now we have to go back to Drift Glass's archives in December of 2009, where he said, I'm done with the conservative movement. I break with thee. And I throw dog poop on your shoes.
Yeah. Because, thank you, Steve Martin.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an annual
All right.
with him.
In the end, we love you.
We do. And each
we
week.
We love you and we're hugging you. And if you need a hug, tweet me up at Blue Gal. I'm here and I'll follow you back. Just say, I listened to you on the podcast and here's a hug.
Got like 2 minutes left on my battery here, so we got to fly.
Okay, here we go. Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listener. This week's internet kitty is named the Chair Lady.
Chair Lady.
Not only does she love every level of chairs, but she is also in charge at her house, of course.
Of course.
You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go Postal Unions! Letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford $5 to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us by sending us $5.
Yeah.
And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We believe in buying local, and we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link. If your alternative is a big box store, I actually went to Amazon today to see if you could buy manure to mail to your congressman, and yes, you can. I'm not recommending that anyone do that, but you can actually buy dehydrated chicken shit on Amazon and have it shipped.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
This store has everything.
I'm not suggesting anyone do that.
No.
Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with a contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Please share our show on Facebook or Twitter, and thank you for doing that. Hey, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, just like Donald Trump, the Internet Kitties don't stand by anything. Except the litter box, when it hasn't been scooped in a while.
Let's think about living.
Think about living.
Let's think about loving.
Think about loving.
Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the popping and the loving, loving, loving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2017, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.